Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Wednesday. It's June 16th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. Normally, we would expect to be able to speak to none other than socioeconomic research scholar. But he's away on vacation. And so we won't be able to speak to Orrin M. Levin-Waldman today. Hopefully in about 2 weeks, maybe four, before we get to see him again. In the meantime, we've got an unusual schedule today. I'm going to be starting the first half hour. Tim Hodges, who's a candidate vying to represent the 6th District, he'll join us at 10:30. And then I'll be back from 11 to 11:30. And then we'll be joined by Mount Vernon Mayor Sean Patterson Howard. So let's talk about some really important issues. We're talking about spurning the false promise of protectionism. Well, the U.S. economy, as you know, is suffering from poor labor performance, but this is not due to global trade, and that's something to think about. So protectionism is back. Above all, in the United States, the driving forces behind it are xenophobic and nostalgic. Arguments can be made for a degree of self-sufficiency for reasons of national security. But those arguments need meticulous assessment. And this is not what has been happening, certainly not under Donald Trump. But though the tone is different under the Biden administration, the reality is not, alas. It's certainly not. On the contrary, protection has become one of the few issues on which there is bipartisan consensus. Well, the communique issued by the leaders of the G7 stated that, quote, we have agreed, quote, to continuing secure our future prosperity by championing freer, fairer trade within a reformed trading system, end quote. And this papers over cracks between the United States, increasingly doubtful about trade, and, say, Germany, dependent upon trade for its prosperity, as is true of all the smaller high-income countries. It is not surprising that a large country with a sophisticated economy and diverse resources such as the United States tends to trade less intensely than smaller ones and so cares less about it. It gains many of the benefits of trade through internal specialization. But as Ann Kruger argues in her book, International Trade, trade has been the handmaid of economic growth across the world since the Second World War. Moreover, even if trade is less vital for the United States than for other members of the G7, this does not mean that the U.S. is hapless or a hapless victim of the wicked practices of the rest of the world, and especially of China. On the contrary, the resort to protection is like looking for keys under a streetlight, not because that is where they were lost, but because that is where it is brightest. Now, the U.S. problem is that protection, a tax on the domestic economy, mainly consumers, for the benefit of producers, is a politically acceptable but ineffective substitute for a well-designed social safety net. Europeans have much to learn from the United States, especially on innovation, but on how to combine open trade with personal economic security and so adjust to trade, they are far behind. In a splendid recent polemic, the economist Adam Posen takes the protectionist arguments head on. In particular, he notes, far from being exceptionally open to trade, the U.S. is relatively closed, and far from having suffered an exceptional degree of opening over the past two decades, it has been retreating from openness. Far from having been exceptionally buffeted by imports from China, for each loss to China to Chinese competition, roughly 150 jobs were lost to similar feeling shocks in other industries. And far from being a unique victim of declining employment in manufacturing, the very same thing has been happening to all high-income countries. No doubt the U.S. economy has suffered from high and rising inequality in a poor labor force performance, with the employment of prime-age adults increasingly lagging behind that of the of most G7 members. But those, or rather these phenomena, cannot be due to trade. Since the U.S. is less open than the others, even Japan, the true explanations include the emergence of new fortunes in innovative sectors, but also rent-extracting behavior throughout the economy, and not least absence of support for income and work, notably on the latter for mothers. Why have the losses of industrial jobs been so politically salient? A part of the answer is that they were jobs of predominantly white and male workers. But it is also because in the United States, the absence of universal health care and next to no support for retraining and job seeking makes the loss of a job mean also the loss of basic security. A modern economy becomes more flexible, not less, by separating security from a specific job. In the absence of what Danes, meaning the Danish, call flex security, protectionism may seem inevitable, but nothing is going to bring the old industrial jobs back. Robots are going to replace workers on production lines everywhere. Manufacturing will end up like agriculture, fantastically productive while employing virtually no production workers. As Posen asserts, nostalgia is just not a sensible policy. Apart from nostalgia and a search for security in the wrong place, there is xenophobia. But the days when China was the overwhelming force and supply of cheap manufacturers have long gone. The debate now centers increasingly on national security. There is a view, for example, that the pandemic dangers of extended supply chains. The opposite is the case. After initial shortages, because demand was so unexpectedly strong, supply surged. Relying on one's own production would not have solved this. There is a problem today with vaccine supply, but that is due to a global shortage of production capacity and the strength of demand from the rich. Yes, there is a case for maintaining technological leadership in vital sectors and for security of supply of essential products. But these concerns need to be defined and addressed with precision. Above all, in economic competition with China, democratic stability and investment in people, infrastructure, and innovation will be the decisive factor. Meanwhile, the continuation of trade across the world will not only cement mutual interdependence, but underpin prosperity, especially for poorer countries. As the World Bank's excellent World Development Report 2020 on supply chains and development has stressed, this is also compatible with tackling climate change under the right globally agreed policies. The G7 is correct that the world trading system needs reform, but this must not mean destruction. We should not throw liberal trade away for the wrong reasons and in the wrong way. Then we have another issue. Bear with me a moment. And that's about Britain. Question is, can Britain expect few favors, or will Britain expect few favors from Biden? And that seems to be the case. The Cold War film Dr. Strangelove owes its shelf life to its portrait of U.S. and U.K. not U.S.-Soviet relations. The straight man of the peace is a British officer who must talk American hotheads out of a nuclear first strike. There was more to this account of the United States as a feral giant than the snark of an Anglophile director. Well, real life bore it out when Britain from the Vietnam War. It continued to chime as London tried to nag Washington into such ventures as the Kyoto Protocol and the Iran Nuclear Pact. How weird to be living through a reversal of these roles. For perhaps the first time since the Suez Crisis, the U.S. is the most committed of the two nations to the norms and institutions of the global commons. As Britain tampers with the Northern Ireland Protocol, an Irish-American president looks on with scarcely concealed dismay. While Joe Biden aims to increase U.S. foreign aid, Britain, according to one of its own government ministers of parliament, is the only G7 state to make a cut. And this comes after an odd few years for British moral standing in Washington. There was no shame in the initial cultivation of President Donald Trump. Emmanuel Macron made no less a fuss of him during his first summer in charge of France. And what distinguished, if that is the word, Britain was the decision keep it up after it became plain that Trump was bent on spoiling spoiling role in the world. And the governing Democrats are too busy to be vindictive about such bygones, but the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who kept a scrupulous distance from the last White House, will be the first European leader to visit the new one. It is hard to convey the desire in an Asia facing U.S. for zero distractions in the rest of the world. The waiving of sanctions over the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, the exit from Afghanistan, the presidential talks with Vladimir Putin, all suggest a nation set on minimizing non-Chinese sources of stress. To that end, Biden views the United Europe, a strong and vibrant entity, quote-unquote, as a guarantor of European cohesion like all pre-Trump presidents. In Washington, there is no bitterness or even much discussion anymore of Britain's decision to leave it, but nor is there the slightest qualm about engaging with the continent through Berlin or Paris if London renders itself peripheral, eccentric. Well, the logic of Brexit might further distance the two countries. To make a go of it, the United Kingdom will have to show an opportunism that jars with Washington's new view of the world. One case in point is regulatory and tax competition. The ink was still damp on the U.S.-led accord for a minimum corporate tax rate when Britain suggested exemptions for financial services. On a grander canvas, a post-European Union UK must also entertain Chinese trade and investment with all the qualms that implies in Washington. It is true enough that several G7 members favored a softer communique on China than Biden secured over the weekend. But only one has just lost the safety in numbers of its regional trade bloc. For all the pomp of the new Atlantic Charter, Britain and America will keep returning to this crux. The point of Brexit is the flexibility to scour the world for commercial and diplomatic openings. But the new U.S. vision is one of pan-Western solidarity against economic undercutting, against the raw weight of China. It is a vision that animates Biden evermore. With his domestic plans stalled, his best chance of a consequential presidency lies abroad. In essence, he is going through a sped-up version of the outward turn that U.S. leaders perform after a midterm loss of Congress. For a sense of the change, consider that it took him only a reported 2 hours to call Israel's new prime minister, Naftali Bennett. His predecessor, Benjamin Netanyahu, waited almost a month for the same contact. Whether this reflects anti-Netanyahu peak or a less pandemic-occupied Biden, it amounts to the same thing, a president who regards shoring up the West as an ever greater priority. All UK governments get things wrong about the United States. My favorite is their inflated sense of how many Americans have an ancestral link to Britain. Even the white ones are more likely to be Germans than cousins. But this one stands at a particular odd angle to the White House. You have to be in at least the September of your life to remember when it was the U.S. chiding the U.K. to honor global norms. If those days are back, the junior nation should not assume it will be countless. And I'm in the September years of my life. So important. Okay, we've got about another 17 minutes, so let's do some other things at the moment. Bear with me a moment. And let's go on to the national, the local stage. This is very interesting. The Westchester County Executive George Latimer is signing legislation which increases veterans' tax exemption cap today, and he did so by beginning his press conference at 10 o'clock this morning when we began our broadcast. It's about 17 minutes ago. So joined by local veterans and leaders, County Executive George Latimer will sign legislation he introduced and passed the Board of Legislators unanimously, which raises the veterans real property tax exemption caps to up to $75,000 for all veterans, up to $50,000 additionally for veterans who fought in combat zone of operations, and up to $250,000 for service disabled veterans. It will do so at approximately 10 this morning, which is what you suggested. It took place in front of Mount Vernon City Hall on the ground floor, room number 4, the Veterans Service Agency, located at 1 Roosevelt Square North in Mount Vernon. Latimer said, quote, providing this tax relief for the brave men and women in our community who fought to protect our nation and all it stands for is a small gesture with a larger impact. I am proud to work with my colleagues on the Board of Legislators to ensure this benefit is available to these real-life heroes. In Westchester County, we honor those who have risked their lives to protect ours with both our words and our deeds. Very nicely said, that's for sure. Then there are other things that are happening. Attorney General has requested files of mysterious Mount Vernon robocalls. Seems that in order to update voters and media on the state of the investigation into robocalls, the Mount Vernon Forward, it's a team of candidates. One is Danielle Brown, another is Ed Potiat, and the third, Caitlin Gleason. They released their statement today from one of their members, which is Danielle Brown, who's an attorney. So Ms. Brown said, late last week, investigators from Attorney General James' office contacted me in response to the letter we submitted to request an investigation into the disgraceful and illegal robocalls plaguing Mount Vernon households. The investigators requested audio files of the offensive robocalls in question, and we have provided the Attorney General with the material. We do not yet know who originated this gross disinformation attack, as there is no legally required committee or expenditure filed with New York State. quote, as this investigation continues, we ask Mount Vernon residents to remain calm and resolute, focused on working together to create a better future for our city. We recognize that in the context of the Attorney General's ongoing efforts to probe disinformation and robocalls in our state, that we will probably not have a resolution to this case before the June 22nd primary, but I am committed to full cooperation with the Attorney General's investigation, however long it takes. Well, Mount Vernon Forward also noted the recent intervention by the Attorney General into a national robocall case targeting black voters for intimidation and disinformation, and this was learned via Law Street News. And New York State's law enforcement officer, Letitia James, announced that her office was granted permission to participate in a case brought by robocalling victims and the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation against two well-known conspiracy theorists who orchestrated a voter intimidation scheme last year. And if you go to our website, you could find a link, which is to the full story. Well, in keeping with our pledge of transparency and openness of public life, Mount Vernon Forward team of Caitlin Gleason, Ed Potiate, and Danielle Brown will provide updates on this case as we receive them. And so that's the story there coming out of Mount Vernon. Now, bear with me a moment as we look at some other issues. There's seconds here. 1 minute. Okay. I know if you heard this, this is big news. Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano has appointed Anthony Pagano fire commissioner. So he, the commissioner who had left the department as a 30-year veteran, as and fire commissioner before, now returns. And so welcome back, Fire Commissioner Anthony Pagano. So that's going to be very, very good. I remember the first time I ever met him. We were on Sawmill River Road. There was a fire, major, major fire in a big complex, housing complex. And he is so brilliantly, especially with fire. I don't know about other issues of acumen that he may have, but certainly when it came to fire, I was impressed because he was able to show me where the fire was, I guess, at the height of its power. And he proved to me that he knew full well where it was going and how long it would take to get there, and he predicted on the button. It was unbelievable to watch whatever he had said before the fire had gotten there, as if they were following instructions. That the fire was following instruction to get where he expected it to be, and it did just that. And that was the way his capacity to understand fire and understand the weather system around there at the time. He was literally able to have the fire trucks positioned in such a way to really extinguish the fire. And I have never lost faith in his capacity based on that first time. I was impressed then, and I was impressed while he was the commissioner, and welcome him back because I think it's a great move. Oh, certainly knowledgeable, that's for sure. And he has a good personality on top of that, which makes life a little bit easier, too. Okay, now let me just see here. Okay, we'll read this to you later. We have an article about the Yonkers Inspector General's investigation of City Council President Mike Keeter. So we'll see where that goes. I'll read you the letter from his lawyers who represent him. And I was pleased that we were the first to get the information from his lawyers. Okay, and let me just see what else we have here. And I'll read you another article from local, written by Bob Weir. He questions whether in 2021 does anyone seriously believe blacks are oppressed? An interesting question. And what else do we have here? Of course, Hispanic Democrats of Westchester have endorsed Lakeisha Collins-Bellamy for Yonkers City Council president. She's running as a Democrat against the incumbent Democrat Mike Hayter. And then whoever the winner is of the Democratic Party line in the primary, that will be revealed either on the 22nd or the 23rd, depending on how quickly they count all the ballots. They will face off against Ron Matten, who's running as a Republican and also running for Yonkers City Council president. So that'll be very interesting as well. And what else? I think that's basically it. We've got just a few more minutes before Mr. Hodges calls. So I'm going to go back to the studio screen. Bear with me a moment. Okay, where are we here? Find out in a moment. So many pages come on when I read some of my notes. Show me what I've missed while I was talking to you guys. One second. Okay, here we are at the studio screen, or almost. One second. Well, it looks like President Biden and Vladimir Putin have had their meeting. It's now about 6 or 7 hours later. I think it's about six hours later in Europe. So it's got to be 6 hours. It's about 4:30 in the afternoon. So I don't think we'll get an update today. We'll have to define that for you by tomorrow. Okay. So we're going to be speaking to Mr. Hodges in a moment. In the meantime, let me play a commercial break for you. Bear with me a second. We'll tell you about the Yonkers Tribune.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Well, we've had a couple of changes. The most important is that our phone number is 347-415-4326. So 347-415-4326. Also, we've had issues with the Hushmail account. So we are going to be moving all the accounts that used to use Hushmail probably within a week or two to another account completely. In the meantime, we always had a backup. And our backup is whyteditor@gmail.com. So whyteditor@gmail.com. Last commercial before I'm
just... Hey, you a judge?
Sora, I report on cheese. I don't judge.
Well, I heard on the radio Cabot Cheddar always wins awards for taste.
Well, let me see my notes. Best taste? Check. Best texture? Check. The farm families in Cabot, Vermont have won every major award in the cheese world.
Every award?
Every.
What about the U.S. Cheese Championships?
Cabot's won that many times.
How about the American Cheese Society Contest?
Cabot won it.
World Cheese Championship Award?
Best in class on cheddar.
Fiery Food Challenge.
Cabot.
International Fancy Food Show.
Cabot rules.
The Stanley Cup.
That's hockey.
Oh.
Look, Cabot's won awards for best sharp, best light. light, best butter, and best cheddar.
Yeah, but a certain Big Cheese Company's TV ad show, they won an award from judges wearing bright yellow lab coats.
Oh, those are actors.
Not real judges?
Real judges wear white lab coats.
They do?
Look, Cabot is best because they own the company, ship the milk, make the cheese. They won so many times, the real judges even asked one of Cabot's cheesemakers to be a judge.
I don't believe you.
Here, taste.
Hey, I can taste why Cabot's won every award.
You be the judge.
And I get to wear a yellow lab coat.
White lab coat. Check. Check.
The best tasting cheddar on the planet is...
Time and time again.
Cabot cheddar.
Check.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Hodges. How are you, sir?
Hi, Hezzy. How you doing?
Okay. It's good to talk to you. We've never spoken before, so I've seen your photo. So I feel a little familiarity there. So thanks for making the time for our audience. It's really a pleasure. Well, tell me, you've been in the police department for many years, and you're now retired from the police department. What made you consider moving into the political realm? What is exciting about that for you?
So you know what, Hezzy, kind of unbeknownst to me, I think it was I was preparing this whole time. You know, I was always into public service. I was always looking to do good things for the community. So after I retired and I actually took a job, I work at St. John's Hospital now. You know, I was just reflecting and saying, you know, I really want to continue public service and help, you know, people in the city that I love. And, you know, when I get out and meet people, it really, you know, it just ingrains that in me because as I meet people, they're looking for a voice. They're looking to be heard, and I think I'm that person.
And what gives you that sense of confidence? Because there are very few people who have that capacity to listen. I mean, they may be there, and you don't know if they hear you, but you do hear people. I've heard that from many, many people, that they've always found that you are responsive. And how do you take the input that you get from people, and how do you translate that to something that's going to be conducive and responsive to their needs or wants, just in generality, because we're not talking about politics now. It's just being able to interact with people on a comfortable and non-threatening way, you know, because how do you do that? Because you're a big guy, you know, that could be that's threatening for a lot of people. But I'm not as big as you, but I used to be, but I'm getting older. So I think I'm shrinking. So that's the case. But how do you do that?
You know, Hezzy, I tell a lot of people this, and I'm kind of proud of it. I grew up in Carroll Avenue in very humble beginnings. But, you know, we had a strong sense of family, and we had parents who always – taught us values, but they also taught us integrity and how to be nice to people and be a servant for others. And I think that in itself, and it really translated to my siblings also, who were very similar. And, you know, as we moved into, like, middle class after hard work and trials and tribulations, you know, you look back and you say, wow, you know, we're not wealthy or anything like that, but we're successful in the field that we chose, and now it's time to say, hey, you know what? Let me do some work to help people. People want to be heard. You know, I remember looking back, and you know, we would always pick up the litter and work for people and shovel their driveway, and we actually my brothers and I shined shoes on South Broadway, and you know what? You never forget that, and you just say, people want to be heard. You're not going to do it. Someone says, you know, this little thing is bothering me. And you know what? To be able to help that person and to make them say, wow, somebody really cares about me. I think that's what's kind of ingrained in me. And I just want to keep pushing that out to people. The whole political aspect, like you said, I really don't even want to be considered a politician. I really would love to be considered a servant for the people.
Well, I think that's very well said, you know, but few people have been able to climb up to that level of expertise and know how to do that. So it's really a lost art, I think. But then, you know, I'm an old man, so who knows? But those are old standards. But I think that I see that they're starting to come back. because people recognize that you can't dismiss people. We live in a society and it matters. So when you think about the political realm, how do you see your role should you become elected to the 6th District? There's, of course, an incumbent, so you're running against the incumbent. But the point is people are looking for someone that can give them voice. And how do you see the role of a city council member on the city council vis-a-vis, for example, the mayor? What's the dynamic there for you? How do you see it?
So I think, you know, in my case, you know, in particular, I've been working for the police department and you know, for the city for, you know, 34 years. I know the ins and outs. I know all the players. So I think I even have like a bit of a jump start. But I think what we really need to do is, especially in the 6th District, we need to listen to the people. They want to be heard. They want to know that what their message is going down to City Hall, and it's going to remain the same. It's not going to be changed. It's not, you know, we're not going to promise people something and then go down there and change our mind. I think that's what people really want. They want someone they can trust. And, you know, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. That's my history. People can tell you that I adhere to what I believe in and what people tell me. As an elected person, people are putting their faith in you. And, you know, they want to know who you are also. So when I go on knock doors and people say, well, who is my council person now? To me, that's awful. When I'm on the city council, everybody in that district will know who I am. They'll have my cell phone number. They'll have a contact, immediate contact. People, you know, when they're down, when the chips are down, they want to see you. They don't want to see you at ribbon cuttings and all the fun stuff. They want to see you at 4 o'clock in the morning when there's a fire or there's some kind of tragedy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's my forte. My forte on the police department was operations. And I made sure that when the things were bad, that's when I rose to my highest level of achievement.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you see your role is to hear what people have to say in your district? And do you have ideas at present as to what the district is trying to say or that may not have been heard at any particular point? There are a lot of issues in the district. Do you have any concepts or is it too early to come up with ideas or it's hard to tell even before you become elected? I don't really know because I've never run for political office. I don't know.
You're smart. So I think
a couple of things come to mind. Smart or not.
A couple of things come to mind. So where I live right off Palmer Road. And, you know, there's major highways there, the Sprain, Central Avenue, 87, pretty much in my backyard. So, you know, the speeding and the drag racing and those inherent problems, that they just continue and continue. I think when we attack a problem like that, there has to be sustainability. If we have law enforcement out there checking speeders and this and that, it can't be like, oh, we did it this weekend and we wrote 100 tickets and it's all done. So I think people are looking for something sustained. We need to look into these decibel meters.
But isn't that so easy to do? We have cameras everywhere. How come we don't have cameras on the highway? Point out
100%
the speeders.
Right.
So what's so difficult? I mean, it's not your fault, but it seems like it's so difficult to right a wrong. And it's very dangerous.
But that's my point. Like, I think people, you know, if you're in government, you have to really sustain these things and get rid of them for once and for all. They have decibel meters now on the highway that if your vehicle is making a certain amount of noise, which these, you know, these motorcycles and cars do, they automatically send you a summons in the mail. So how many, after you get a few of those, I'm sure you're going to, you know, you're going to make your muffler a little better or you're not going to travel that roadway anymore. So I think we have to really think out of the box and do things to help people, not at election time, not when it's time to vote. All of a sudden the potholes get filled and, you know, everybody mm-hmm. comes alive now. So I think sustainability in anything you do and anything that government does is a good thing for the people.
And then, so what sort of concepts have you been able to formulate in your mind based on your talking and going through the political process of getting to know the constituents in the district where you live? What have you been able to deduce from them? What are their concerns?
So for the last 3 months, just about every day, I've been going out, knocking on doors, and do about 30, 40 doors a day. And the biggest thing that I see is quality of life. People, they just want their day to be just a little bit better. They just want to be able to sleep at night and not have noise. They don't want to drive out of their neighborhood and see graffiti all over the place. Mm-hmm. They don't want excessive traffic, you know, like traffic flow and different things. So I think it's just very, mm-hmm. these are very minor things that just people need. They need that done, like potholes. We know every spring there's going to be potholes. We know where they are generally because it's where the water forms and when it thaws. So what we need to have, like almost like a GPS, where every spring we send out the guys and we do the potholes. You shouldn't have to like sell your vote to somebody to get a pothole filled in your neighborhood. It should be just a no-brainer. Right.
Aren't we using the wrong material? There are places I hear in Mount Vernon where they have a biodegradable stuff that lasts a lot longer and can fix potholes even in the wintertime. Because usually you can't fix them in the wintertime when they happen all the time.
You're right.
So why don't we do things like that? I mean,
it just seems very simple. I totally agree with you.
It just seems simple to me. What do I know? And then, so the other thing is, like, how do you, so based on all the things that you've already said, and it's quite a bit, how do you see then your role when you would become the city council member for the 6th district? How do you see giving that voice? What would you need to do to get the ear of your city council members? But at the same time, you also need to get the ear of the mayor, because the legislation comes from the mayor's office and then goes for your okay as city council membership to either pass or not pass legislation. And then that's the dance. How would you see that? How do you find you have a gift to talk and you do it well. So do you think that helps a great deal? I would think it does.
Absolutely. I think it does. I think you need to communicate properly, but it also about relationships. You have to have relationships with people. You don't have to love them. You don't have to, you know, break bread with them. But even if you disagree with people, you have to sit down at the table. You have to, you know, listen to reason in a lot of ways. But you also have to listen to the constituents. And when they say this is something that we really feel strongly about, you may have to sit at that table and disagree with somebody. But you kind of have to hold your ground in a diplomatic way. And I think a lot of times people, you know, they kowtow to other things and they let the people down. Like when you're representing that district, you know, the people are putting all their faith in you to send their message. It's not your message. It's got to be their message.
Well, one thing that's also very interesting, which I find at least interesting from my perspective, is we've had a change in the political climate in the nation, I guess, for quite a while. And there's certainly the 6th district seems to have a more conservative streak than maybe some other districts, because we got 6 districts in the Yonkers city, in the city of Yonkers. And yet I always found that Yonkers is a little bit of country and a little bit of rock and roll. It's a little bit conservative. It's a little bit liberal and has a little bit of both issues. I think that's with most people, but it seems to be very well defined in Yonkers. Do you find that it's difficult to run as a Democrat? You're running as a Democrat in the 6th District, or is it equal, basically, even because you could be both a Democratic liberal and also conservative in your thinking, too? Can you marry those two?
Yes. So I think you hit it on the head, Hezzy. So I'm endorsed by the Democrats. I'm their nominee, and I'm also the conservative nominee. So that in itself
really?
Shows
Great.
That.
Good for you.
Yes. That kind of shows the people in the district that even if they're a Republican, you know, we're all kind of looking for the same thing, especially in local mm-hmm. politics. You know, you want to call mm-hmm. yourself a Democrat or a Republican. My values as a Democrat are a certain way. Do I believe in government? I believe in housing for people. I believe in education. So there are some Democratic values there, but also I'm a conservative in a lot of different ways. I'm pro-law mm-hmm. enforcement. This whole thing with defund the police backfired, and that's my opinion. I'll always stick with it. It backfired mm-hmm. across the country, and violence, you know, has gone to high levels again. So we really have to, before we jump to these major things, like even bail reform, did we need bail reform? We certainly needed some bail reform. But when you go mm-hmm. so far to the other side, you know, now you're endangering the lives of people, and you really, you got to sit down at the table and work things out. And do we need police reform? Of course we need police reform. Mm-hmm. We need bail reform. But you can't just go to extremes. You got to work on these things little by little. And I think the people in the 6th District, you're right, it's kind of 50-50 with Democrats and Republicans. But I mm-hmm. think that the people generally want police. They want to feel safe. They want to have clean roads and areas, and they want to have parks, and just like everybody else does. So people are people, and I think the people in the 6th District are going to realize that I'm the appropriate candidate for them.
Okay. So how do you go about giving expression to the ideas that you'll be picking up from the district? Are you going to be able to espouse them on the platform of the city council? How do you reach out to people to make sure that they're aware of your positions? Because a lot of people get into political office and you don't hear a word from them for 4 years. It's amazing.
Yes.
And then they come out. Yeah, but it's not funny, but it is a reality.
It is a reality. But I'll tell you what, and they call this a part-time job, the city council. It's not a part-time mm-hmm. job. This mm-hmm. is the full-time job. This is where mm-hmm. you have to
do it right.
Anything I've ever taken on in my life, I've put 100% into it. I held every rank in the Yonkers Police Department. I studied very hard over the years and achieved, thank goodness, number one on our captain's exam a few years back. And mm-hmm. when I commit myself to something, I go all out. And my wife knows that, and she's prepared for it. My daughter is married, and she's actually living in Florida. So I don't have any major commitments except my job here at the hospital where, you know, I'm right here in the city. I'm here for mm-hmm. people. We have 2,000 employees that have already come into my office, and they're like, Tim, I'm going to need this done. I need that done. And you know what? I'm mm-hmm. a voice. I'm here for people every day. I'm a committed and Hezzy, the reason I am running is because of that. When you get elected, you can't go and just hide somewhere. You have to be out for the people. All these promises that are made, and then you don't see somebody till, you know, that now they want to fill your pothole when the election comes. Mm-hmm. I say to the people in the 6th District, give me the chance, and you'll know who I am, you'll know where to find me, and I'll be at everything that I possibly can be for this city, because it's a city I love. I'm not going to go anywhere. You look mm-hmm. at some of these that run for office, and they fail, and you never see them again, or they move out of the state. I mean, either yes. you're in it, or you're not. And I'm totally in it. I'm my entire life. I'm not leaving Yonkers, and I'm committed.
Well, I think that's. I think you got to be. Otherwise, it's just not worth anybody's time. What else do you see that's important that strikes you as important that I probably am too ignorant to have asked because I don't know you at all.
I know of you, but I don't know you at all. I'm glad I got to speak with you today. You know, I've heard of you and we've never spoken. But you know what I think I bring to the table is my relationships. Over the years I've formed relationships with so many people in the city. I've helped so many people. You know, the whole being involved in the police department, my police career was always one of helping people. I was never that person. I wasn't the person to write tickets. I hated writing tickets. I was known as letting, you know, using a lot of discretion. And people in the police department many years ago told me, you'll never achieve anything. You don't like writing tickets and you don't like making arrests. And you know what? I always felt like it's always better to help people out. And we found that in the police department that you can't arrest your way out of problems. And sure enough, 30 years later, I became deputy chief. And I did it by helping people. And even the last week that I was on the job, as I was the highest ranking uniform person, I was walking the beat with my fellow officers down at Getty Square, because that's what I always did. I went out to the people.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be a person in the office. So I'm a person of the people. People are going to see me out there. They're going to know that I'm part of the fabric of this city. And I'll tell you, I give my hat off to the mayor. I see him at everything. I don't know how he keeps the schedule. But when you're like that, you're committed to doing things for the people. And you see the mayor at everything, and I'm like, how does this guy do it? But I'll tell you, I'm going to be right with him at all the functions, good and bad. And I tell that at 4 o'clock in the morning when the chips are down, that's when they want to see you, and I'll be there.
Well, you know, I guess there are just so many things you can say and do. And then I guess it becomes proof in the pudding. So once you get elected, hopefully people would be comfortable. Your demeanor sounds wonderful. And we haven't had such an open discussion with a lot of people because they seem to cloud their intention. It just seems like a lot of platitudes that I hear. It's not like I challenge them on radio, that's for sure, but... it would be nice to have somebody that's open and willing to talk. And is it important to be out there, you know, talking to the public, having meetings? They used to have a police department had meetings, I think once a month or every second month in a lot of the different precincts. And that was very good. Do you think that people will come out to listen to, to you when you get elected?
You know what?
Just to be able to find out what's going on?
I used to speak at many of the community council meetings at the precinct, and they still have them every month. And of course, because of COVID things. But we should make all of those meetings, people should be able to use Zoom or Teams and be able to listen to those meetings and also interact with those meetings from home. You know, a lot of elderly people or people that are infirm, you know, they should be part. They're part of our town also. They're part of our city. They should have a voice. Even if they can't make a meeting, we should have Zoom for them, or we should have community rooms where they can go and have those types of things. You're always going to get. There's so many smart people, and there's so many people with ideas in the city. You know, you got to pick their brain. People in government, what's so interesting about today
is there are a lot of older people who don't know the technology. I never understood why, if we can put a Zoom up, why that can't be televised on our TV station. because then a lot of people would just turn on the TV because that's what they know how to do. And so this way they could listen in as well, because there's a large population that just don't have either the equipment or the Wi-Fi or even know how to use it. So I always found that to be ridiculous that we didn't put that on for them. But that's interesting. They're doing that now with the Zoom thing, which is good.
Yeah.
So that's a good move.
It really, like, you know, you're not feeling well or you're just, you don't feel like going out. You go on a Zoom call and your voice is still heard. And I've talked to a lot in the district. They say just what you're talking about. They want meetings. They want more of interaction with the politicians. And when you do it in a forum, you're held to it. Now, you know, when people say, oh, I promise you this, I promise you. Well, now you're held to that. I would reach out to the community wide, the district. I feel that a lot of the times on the west side of the district, they're not heard at all. And I would be at every part of the district, not just in my neighborhood, but all the neighborhoods. And you know what I think of big is, Hezzy, I go to all the local restaurants. I go to the local food stores. You know what? It's funny. I don't see anyone. You don't see the politicians at these places. I don't know if they feel like they don't want to be confronted, but I'll be there. I'll be at the IGA on Lockwood and the ShopRite on Tuckahoe Road and all the local restaurants. And I'm part of that fabric also. So, you know what? I don't go to Manhattan to restaurants. I go to Yonkers. I love Yonkers. I think we need to put all of our money and all of our thoughts into Yonkers.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me, too. Are we focusing more attention as far as investment in the city, you think? It looks like there's a lot of discussion about investment and building
I'm really
new
impressed
housing.
I'm really impressed with the downtown. I remember as a young kid, I would go to the Yonkers Pier, and we would fish and crab off the pier.
Mm,
It was a Broaden area, it needed so much work. I mean, this administration's done wonderful things down there. They brought a lot of people, a lot of industry. You know, I think now we have to work on the infrastructure. We need to work on the roads, make the roads bigger. We need to, you know, increase these schools. So I think, you know, every time you do something, there's another effect on something else. So you just have to build the city, but the infrastructure is crucial. The schools are crucial, and the parks. We need to beautify our parks. There's some great parks, but you know, you look at some of these areas, and I don't want to include politics in it, but I'm involved with the Rotary, Yonkers Rotary, and we're doing parks, and I think that's the amazing part. Our parks are beautiful. Look at Untermeyer Park. If you haven't been to it, you really need to. Oh my God, it's absolute jewel. Now we need to make more of those parks, similar to Untermyer and other parts, other areas of the city.
Well, you know what I find is a little bit, undermining when it should be extolled is, you know, like even the Rotary, for example, a lot of people don't know what they do, which is a shame because they accomplish so much, and yet people don't hear about it. That's the thing that's really missing here in Yonkers, is that we don't have much discussion. And the lack of discussion breeds a lot of ignorance because people don't know what's really going on. And that makes it difficult. Better to tackle an issue. It may look like it's blemished now, but you could fix it too. You know, it's just like you fix a pothole. So, it's a very interesting, but the word is important. Sorry.
During COVID, the Yonkers Rotary, along with a lot of local businesses here, we served about 10,000 meals to people, and we don't talk about it. We don't put it in the newspaper. We don't film it.
Why?
Our mantra is serve of self, and I think that's amazing. And they stay apolitical, and I'm glad they do, because we just accomplish good things and don't ask for anything in return.
Well, you know, I don't want you to change the philosophy. It's just that if people don't know, then you can't get more people to help.
Good point. Yeah,
you know,
it's
a building point. It doesn't have to be political.
We do have to market it better because we do need more membership. And I'll tell you, you look at our membership and you look at the diversity in our membership,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a testament to Yonkers how well we do with race issues and with just moving forward and staying positive when it comes to those issues. We don't fall prey to the national highlights in the
mm-hmm.
news.
Right. Well, I think that's important. That's a testament to Yonkers, but a lot of people don't know that story. And
mm-hmm.
that's one of the things that has undermined the city for, I think, a very long time. I've only been here 21 years. So to me, that was evident from the day one is what I saw when I first arrived.
Right.
So very interesting. Well, as usual, it's been a pleasure. I hope you won't be frightened to come back again. And
I wouldn't.
You know, I scare a lot of people. I don't know why, but whatever. How do people learn about your campaign? There's still time to learn and get out to vote. So is there a website they go to or phone contact or how do they learn?
Would you mind if I send you the link and then you could send it out to everybody? Actually in my car and I don't have access to it right now.
Okay, no problem. I'll look it up myself. I just wanted people to be aware of it. So no problem.
Thank you so much
take
for
care
having
and
me.
Thank you for your time.
And I'll always come on time, even for the hard questions.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't give you any hard balls today.
No,
I'm playing softball today. All right.
Thanks.
Anyway, just enjoy the day. Drive safely.
Day.
Thank you very much. You too. Bye. All right. Well, there we have it. None other than Tim Hodges. He's running. He's a candidate for Yonk City Council, vying to represent District 6. And so let me just see if I could find the information about him. Let me just see. 1 second. I know the feeling, you know, when you're driving, you know, there's just so many things. You just can do just so much. Bear with me a second here. Okay, I think this, here it is. Okay. So if you're interested in voting for Tim Hodges, he's running as a Democrat with the Yonkers City Council District 6, and as you heard today, he's also endorsed by the Conservative Party. He holds a master's degree in organizational leadership from Mercy College. He's also earned a certification in leadership from Harvard University. He's a graduate of FBI National Academy, awarded the YPD, that's the Yonkers Police Department Meritorious Service Medal. He's the president-elect of the Yonkers Rotary Club, as he had mentioned. He's been recognized for service to the Yonkers Mexican Chamber of Commerce, the Hudson River Community Association, that's known as HARCA, Exchange Club, Elks Club, Westchester County Detectives Association, Westchester County Police, Emerald Society, Indian American Association, Westchester Dominican Association, and the Westchester Muslim Association. So he is a native, as he mentioned, of Yonkers, a YPD veteran. And let me just quickly look and see where his, here it is. So you can find him on Facebook, Tim Hodges, T-I-M-H-O-D-G-E-S. You could also find him you could email him at Hodges, the number 4, Yonkers. So Hodges4Yonkers@gmail.com. And I don't see his web address. Okay. 1 minute. 1 second. All right. 1 second. I'll find this eventually. see if this comes up. Sorry about the delay. It just wouldn't be right not to give his web address. Assuming I could find it. All right, we'll give it one more shot. I'll just not be able to. Okay, I just don't remember where it may be. Okay, I can't find it. So, but it's somewhere on the website, and I just don't know where it is at the moment, because I know he's got an ad up as well, I've seen, but I don't know where to find it at the moment. Okay, so that's the story there. Now we've got some other things that we could talk to you about. Bear with me a moment. And one second. Okay, I think we should be able to move on from here somehow. Okay, I think we may have gotten, somebody may have just sent us some notice about that. So bear with me a moment, because I think that did just come in. I saw some. Yeah, I read that information. So it doesn't have his email website address. I thought that it did, but I guess not. All right, so evidently that's fine. So anyway, I appreciate the person who sent us that information. So thanks very much. Okay, so we're now going to move on to some other international stuff. We're going to be speaking to Sean Patterson Howard, the mayor of Mount Vernon. She'll be on it at 11:30. Now, this is very interesting. It's an analysis. Like, many Iranians are planning to boycott the vote for a president without power. Isn't that interesting? Following the end of President Hassan Rouhani's two terms in office, Iran goes to the polls on June 18th, it's only 2 days away, to elect a new president. But in the country where the supreme leader and the Revolutionary Guards hold more political, social, and economic power than the president, many Iranians are boycotting the vote and demanding fundamental changes to the system. Who would have ever thought? Well, come June 18, Shahin Mohammadi is certain she won't be making her way to a polling station in a first-ever election boycott. Quote, "I've always voted in every election, but this time I won't be voting," she said. She's a 42-year-old Tehran resident, and she says, "The president after president, I go from disappointment to disappointment, and the country's economic situation does not stop deteriorating. Why should I make the effort to go to the polls if the person I elect does nothing?" Good question. Great question. Maybe that this will be the demeanor in Iran for after all these years since the revolution. Anyway, so come June 18, Shahin Mohammadi is certain she won't be making the vote. Well, dismayed by President Hassan Rouhani's two terms in power, many Iranians this year have publicly stated that they intend to boycott the June 18 presidential election. On social media, the hashtag, "There's no way I will vote," end quote, was trending in the lead up to the 2021 presidential election, with several Iranians voicing a long list of grievances. Well, in early May, I'm sorry, it sounds like I'm laughing, but I am laughing because it certainly took him over 20 years, maybe 30 years, to wake up. Anyway, in early May, more than 230 Iranian activists signed an open letter calling for a boycott of the election, which they described as a formality, and demanding fundamental changes to the country's democratic system, quote, so that the unpopular establishment will not endure. Now, for many Iranians, voting has long been a choice between bad or worse, but this time, large parts of the electorate are rejecting such limited options in the February 2020 legislative elections, the last polls before the June 18 vote, abstentions were at the record 57 percent of the electorate. So in Iran, only candidates approved by the country's unelected Guardians Council can stand for election. So after serving his two-term limits, Rouhani cannot run for re-election, and the inevitable disquiet about the Guardian Council's penchant for disqualifying many moderate and reformist candidates surfaced again this year. Well, but in the lead-up to the 2021 presidential election, a number of Iranians dug deeper into the cause of the country's political malaise, questioning the lack of power entrusted to the elected president of the Islamic Republic and his government. So the issue dominated headlines in April when a leaked audio recording revealed Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif complaining that the country's elite Revolutionary Guards had more influence on Tehran's foreign policy than him. Well, founded after the 1979 Iranian Revolution. I forgot, that's right, it's 1979. So that's now we're 2021. So let's see, that's 42 years. Unbelievable. Time flies when I'm having fun. Anyway, so it was founded in 1979, and they called themselves the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, also known as the Revolutionary Guards. It's a force, quote, responsible for defending the ideals of the Islamic Republic and is accountable only to the Supreme Leader, end quote, explained Thierry Colville, the research scholar at the French Research Center for the International Strategic Studies, IRIS. So under the Iranian constitution, the Supreme Leader holds most of the powers of the state. It is the Supreme Leader who determines the direction of the state, and the Iranian president elected every 4 years has a role comparable to that of a prime minister, explained Jonathan Piran, a historian specializing in Iran at the Brussels-based Etopia Research Center. So elected for life, the Supreme Leader controls the army, police, and state media, and appoints the heads of the judicial system. He also chooses 6 of the 12-member Guardians Council, the body charged with validating presidential candidacies, and the other half is appointed by the judiciary, which is also appointed by the Supreme Leader. What a con. Anyway, there are elements in which Iranian political life is developing, but everything remains centralized around the figure of the leader of the revolution. Hold on a second. Sorry about that. I was all alone, and there's a delivery coming in. You have to take medicine, and they can't leave that out. It's got to be in the refrigerator. Anyway, so that's the story there. So let's move on to some other issues. Bear with me a moment as we move on. Sorry for the interruption. And now let's just see what else is going on here. This is very interesting. Evidently, there's a high interest but low expectations as Biden and Putin talks have kicked off. It seems that with deep disagreements likely and expectations of solving them low, U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin shook hands at a lakeside Geneva villa on Wednesday. That's today already there. For their first summit since Biden took office. And the two men greeted each other after standing with their host, Swiss President Guy Parmelin, outside the LaGrange Villa overlooking Lake Geneva, where they are set to meet for up to 5 hours with cyber attacks, election meddling, and rights abuses among the many contentious issues on the agenda. So sitting in the plush villa's renowned library on either side of a globe, and with their respective flags behind them, the two leaders exchanged a few cordial remarks before the accompanying journalists were asked to leave. Putin thanked Biden, quote, for your initiative to meet today, end quote. And says the U.S. and Russian relations have a lot of issues accumulated that require the highest level meeting, he said, adding, quote, I hope that our meeting will be productive. So Biden, who not only took the initiative for the summit itself, but also for that first handshake, smiled and said, it is always better to meet face to face, end quote. So both have said they hope their talks can lead to more stable and predictable relations, even though they remain at odds over everything from arms control and cyber hacking to election interference and Ukraine. We're not expecting a big set of deliverables out of the meeting, a senior U.S. official told reporters aboard Air Force One as Biden flew to Geneva. Well, Putin's foreign policy advisor, Yuri Ushakov, said that ahead of the talks that he was, quote, not sure that any agreements will be reached. Relations have deteriorated for years, notably with Russia's 2014 annexation of Crimea from Ukraine, its 2015 intervention in Syria and U.S. charges, denied by Moscow of its meddling in the 2016 election that brought Donald Trump to the White House. And they sank further in March when Biden said he thought Putin was a, quote, killer, end quote, prompting Russia to recall its ambassador to Washington for consultations, and the United States recalled its ambassador in April. Well, the senior U.S. official said the United States aimed for a set of taskings, end quote, Washington jargon for assigning aides to work on specific issues, quote, about areas where working together can advance our national interests and make the world safer, end quote. Well, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said whether or not to send back ambassadors would be decided by the two presidents. Quote, today, the presidents will need to determine how to proceed with the heads of the diplomatic missions. Peskov was quoted as saying by Russian news agencies. So while the issues may be vexing, the surroundings will be serene when the presidents meet at Villa LaGrange, an elegant mansion set at a 30. That's more hectare, but that's nearly about 75-acre park overlooking Lake Geneva. So reported by the name of Gulliver Cragg confirmed the mood in Geneva, saying there is very little hope on progress on any of the really big dossiers that could be on the table, but I think that they're hoping for this to put the table back together. Cragg, as a reporter, said that the tit-for-tat expulsions have really soured. It soured the relations between Washington and Moscow, resulting in very little diplomatic contact between the two, but that both sides seem to be willing to put those back together. So he added that although such a rapprochement is usually to as a reset in the diplomatic world, Biden absolutely doesn't want it to be called a reset. He doesn't want to use that term. That was the strategy that he, as Vice President, and Barack Obama as President deployed towards Vladimir Putin a little more than a decade ago, and it is seen as not having been a success. So Cragg, the reporter, said that although interest in the Geneva summit is extremely high, it quote, surpasses a very long way the likelihood of anything really being achieved. So on Wednesday, the summit perimeter was under a tight lockdown with heavy police presence. Following their bilateral meeting, Biden and Putin will continue on to their discussion with broader U.S. and Russian delegations, including U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Russian President, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, along with interpreters. Arms control is one domain where progress has historically been possible despite wider disagreements. In February, Russia and the United States extended for 5 years the New START treaty, which caps their deployed strategic nuclear warheads and limits the land and submarine-based missiles and bombers to deliver them. Well, the senior U.S. official said that Biden would also define areas of vital national interest where Russian misconduct would bring a response. Biden signed an executive order in April giving Washington wide latitude to impose sanctions on Moscow. So in a sign of the strained ties, the talks will not include any meals, and Putin and Biden are expected to hold separate news conferences rather than a joint one. no breaking of bread, said the senior U.S. official. Vladimir Frolov, a former Russian diplomat, told Reuters that Putin wanted respectful ties and to be treated like members of the Soviet Politburo were in the 1960s through the 80s with, quote, a symbolic recognition of Russia's geopolitical parity with the United States. Well, quote, in exchange, they, meaning Moscow, would be willing to cut back on some of the loony stuff, end quote, Frolov had said, saying he meant, quote, no poisonings, no physical violence, no arrests or kidnappings of U.S. and Russian nationals, no interference in domestic politics. Well, that would be great. Dmitry Trenin, director of the Carnegie Moscow Center think tank, set the bar for Wednesday's talks low. Quote, he says, the principal takeaway in the positive sense from the Geneva meeting would be making sure that the United States and Russia did not come to blows physically so that a military collision is averted, he said. Well, in contrast to Trump, whose 2018 summit with Putin in Helsinki included a meeting accompanied only by interpreters, Biden and Putin are not expected to have any solo dealings. Standing beside Putin in Helsinki, quote, Trump refused to blame the Russian leader for meddling in the 2016 U.S. election, casting doubt on the findings of his own intelligence agency and sparking a storm of domestic criticism. So those are the disparities between the two leaders, the past president, the present president, and, of course, the president seems for life, Putin, on the other end. Now, bear with me a second. Where is this here? Oh, yeah, I remember we were talking about this yesterday, but the leftist leader in Peru, Castillo, has claimed victory in a presidential election as Fujimori continues to cite fraud. Well, evidently she's lost, and nobody's going to be paying attention to her as of tomorrow. It seems that Harvey Weinstein, you remember him, he's going to be extradited to Los Angeles to face sex assault charges. Well, he's a jailed ex-filmmaker, Harvey Weinstein, who's serving a 23-year prison sentence for rape and sexual assault in New York, can be transferred to Los Angeles, a judge ruled on Tuesday, paving the way for a new trial on additional charges. Well, lawyers for Weinstein, who was found guilty last year in a landmark verdict for the Me Too hashtag movement, had been arguing for weeks against the transfer, most notably on medical grounds. However, Erie County Court Judge Kenneth Case rejected the arguments, giving a green light for the transfer during a video hearing. While no date has yet been set, Los Angeles prosecutors expect to remove Weinstein from the Erie County prison sometime between late June and mid-July, a spokeswoman for the county prosecutor had said. At the end of the hearing, Weinstein plunged his head into his hands. 69-year-old former Hollywood mogul is accused in Los Angeles of rape and sexual assault against five women, which would make him eligible for up to 140 years in prison. Well, Weinstein denies all charges and has always maintained that his interactions with the women who brought the New York and Los Angeles cases against him were consensual. Weinstein filed an appeal in April in New York against the rape and sexual assault convictions. In total, nearly 90 women have accused Weinstein of sexual harassment or assault. Okay, so we'll find out what's going on there. My God, well, we'll find out eventually. Bear with me a second here. Got a few more minutes. Bear with me a second before the mayor comes on. Tell you about this report. Israel has launched airstrikes on Gaza after Palestinians had sent incendiary balloons across the border. The Israeli Air Force launched airstrikes in the Gaza Strip early Wednesday after militants in the Palestinian territory sent incendiary balloons into southern Israel in the first flare-up between the two sides since a major conflict killed hundreds last month. Well, the airstrikes and balloons marked the first major flare-up between Israel and Gaza since a ceasefire on May 21 ended 11 days of heavy fighting that killed 260 Palestinians, according to Gaza authorities and 13 people in Israel, the police and army there had said. where tensions spilled over to the occupied West Bank, where the Israeli army said they shot a Palestinian woman after she attempted to attack soldiers. The Gaza strikes were the first under the new coalition government headed by Naftali Bennett, who took over on Sunday after ousting longtime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Well, the uptick in violence came after more than 1,000 Jewish ultra-nationalist demonstrators bearing Israeli flags poured into Jerusalem's Flashpoint Old City on Tuesday, with scores of police deployed and international monitors urging calm. According to Palestinian sources, the Israeli Air Force targeted at least one site east of Khan Yunis in the south of the Gaza Strip. And explosions were seen, in Khan Yunis. And the military said that in response to the arson balloons, its fighters jets had struck military compounds belonging to the Hamas terror organization, and said that, quote, facilities and meeting sites for terror operatives in Khan Yunis were targeted. There was no indication of any casualties. The military added that it was, quote, prepared for any scenario, including a resumption of hostilities in the face of the continuing terror activities from the Gaza Strip. Israeli firefighters said that the incendiary balloons caused around 20 fires. In the West Bank on Wednesday, a Palestinian woman was shot after attempting to ram Israeli soldiers with her car and attack them with a knife, the military said. The Palestinian health, where is it? The health, I just lost this one second. Oh, where is it here? I just lost a page. Yeah, the health ministry said, the Palestinian health ministry said the woman later died of her wounds. So the incident took place near Hizma, south of Ramallah, with official Palestinian news website Wafa identifying the woman as Mai Afana, 29, from the town of Abu Dis, just outside of Jerusalem. And, both the United Nations and the United States had called for restraint before the march, which Bennett's new government had authorized. And with tensions high, Israeli police were deployed in numbers, blocking roads and firing stun guns and foam-tipped bullets to disperse Palestinians from the route. So the march triggered protests in the West Bank and Gaza Strip and prompted rebukes and warnings from Israel's allies. And the so-called March of the Flag celebrates the anniversary of the city's reunification after Israel captured East Jerusalem from Jordan in 1967, and it was since annexed. So Tuesday's demonstration was originally scheduled for early May, but canceled twice amid police opposition and threats from Hamas, the Islamist group that controls Gaza. So that seems to be the question of what's going on there, and that's it. So let me move on to our next page. Oh, just in case there's some people here who are interested in soccer, France beat Germany 1-0 in its debut match, and so that was unbelievable, but it was expected. And let me just see what else we have here. I think that's it. Okay, so I'm going to go back to our studio screen now. Bear with me a second, because I'm expecting the mayor on any moment. Okay, she should be calling very shortly. Meantime, let's find out what's going on at the Cabot Creamery. We'll be back.
Hey, you a judge?
Sorta. I report on cheese. I don't judge.
Well, I heard on the radio Cabot Cheddar always wins awards for taste.
Well, let me see my notes. Best taste? Check. Best texture? Check. The farm families in Cabot, Vermont have won every major award in the cheese world.
Every award?
Every.
What about the U.S. Cheese Championships?
Cabot's won that many times.
How about the American Cheese Society Contest?
Cabot won it.
World Cheese Championship Award?
Best in class on cheddar.
Fiery Food Challenge?
Cabot.
International Fancy Food Show?
Cabot rules.
The Stanley Cup?
That's hockey.
Oh.
Look, Cabot's won awards for best sharp, best light, best butter, and best cheddar.
Yeah, but a certain Big Cheese Company's TV ad show, they won an award from judges wearing bright yellow lab coats.
Oh, those are actors.
Not real judges?
Real judges wear white lab coats.
They do.
Look, Cabot is best because they own the company, ship the milk, make the cheese. They won so many times, the real judges even asked one of Cabot's cheesemakers to be a judge.
I don't believe you.
Here, taste.
Hey, I can taste White Cabot's won every award.
You be the judge.
Can I get to wear a yellow lab coat?
White lab coat. Check.
The best tasting cheddar on the planet is...
Time and time again.
Cabot cheddar.
Check.
Okay, there we are. So now we're just going to be waiting for the mayor to call up. See what else is going on there. In anticipation, bear with me a moment here. Okay, I'm going to go onto our screen, on the Yonkers Tribune screen. Bear with me a second here. And then we should be able to, one moment. Well, yeah, I did mention this to you before. The Attorney General is requesting files of mysterious Mount Vernon robocalls. So he's looking into that. That's something that we might consider discussing with the mayor when she comes on. So we'll see what she's got to say. Okay, so hopefully she'll be calling. If not, then I've got other things to do today. So if she's not going to be able to call, I think we're going to just shut down. I'll give it another few minutes, and I think that'll be it. She may be just too busy to respond. Okay. Let me just see if I think I have everything in place then. All right. Okay, I'm not going to waste any more time. It's already I'll wait another few seconds and then we'll go. Okay. Okay, I think we're going to simply shut down the day. Thank you very much for joining us today, and we'll speak to you tomorrow. Let's see, tomorrow, of course, is the Driving Me Crazy crowd. They're going to be doing some automotive reviews, so we'll have that covered in the first half hour, and then I don't remember the rest of the schedule for the day, but we'll post that on the website later on today. Take care. Goodbye.